In a recent program, specifically a program that was aired on July 2nd of 1995, we were discussing the suppression by reactionary members of Congress and also members of the reactionary press of the publication of Army Fact Sheet number 64, describing fascism and warning people against it. This was put out by the United States Army. It was drawn up by General of the Army George Marshall, after whom, of course, the Marshall Plan was named, who's one of the main architects of it. And we dealt with the refusal not only of the media but also of the significant elements of the American government to facilitate distribution of that pamphlet. In that same program, we also took a look at an attempt to court-martial Commandant of the Marine Corps and Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler, a two-time winner of the Congressional Medal of Honor. That attempt to court-martial him, this in 1931, was after he had allegedly insulted Benito Mussolini in a speech. That program illustrates the extent to which fascism is not something that is alien to the United States and not something that is alien to members of its armed forces. This is not to say that all or even most necessarily of the people in the armed forces are fascist, but there is and has been for a very long time a significant fascist element within the American armed forces, as that program, among others, indicates. One of the outgrowths of the fact that many powerful elements in this country, not only elements in the military, but elements within the intelligence community, corporate America, and our political establishment, were ardently pro-fascist and pro-Nazi, won over largely by the anti-communist and anti-labor stance of Nazism and fascism. One of the outgrowths of that was the failure of denazification. Because of the anti-communist and anti-labor stance of Nazism, the Nazis were simply put right back into power at many levels in what used to be West Germany. Now, of course, it is simply Germany after reunification. This, again, is not to say that all Germans or their institutions are Nazi and fascist. On the contrary, much of the information that has come to us about the failure of denazification and the perpetuation of Nazism within German institutions comes from German anti-fascists, people of sincerely democratic instincts and behavior. With the German nation now largely astride Europe, and as I speak on the evening of July 9th of 1995, with German armed forces now engaged in their first combat role, or stationed, assigned to their first combat role since the end of World War II, this an air support mission in the war in Bosnia, I think that it would be timely to take a look not only at the nature of the Bundeswehr, the German army in 1995, an institution which figures to be playing a larger role in German affairs and international affairs, European in particular. We are also going to take a look at the Bundeswehr as it relates to the rest of German policy, political, economic, and national security. The reason for this, I think, was touched on in an article, a very, very brief article, that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, June 21st of 1995. This is a Reuters story, Dateline London, headlined, "Thatcher Warns Against Germany." The article is a short one, one sentence in length, and it reads, "Former Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, repeating her opposition to further integration of the European Union, said yesterday that Britain had not fought World War II to come under the domination of Germany." Increasingly, whether or not Britain comes under the domination of Germany and the extent to which Britain is incorporated into the EU, that will have much to do, by the way, with the political fortunes of John Major and the Tory Party in upcoming British elections. The Germans make no bone about the fact that they would like to see the Labour Party in power in Britain. They feel that will facilitate the growth of German dominance over the EU, Britain in particular. Tragically, and this is due, as I said, largely to the fact that powerful elements in the United States were ardently pro-Nazi and pro-fascist. Indeed, fascism is not something alien to the United States, as Radio Free America number 10, examining our 34 coup attempt, has, among other programs, has made very clear. Because so many powerful American political, economic, and national security interests were pro-Nazi and pro-fascist, denazification was, as I've illustrated in archive programs Radio Free America 2 and Radio Free America number 37, available from archives on audio, as I've illustrated in those programs among others, denazification was simply a failure in Germany, largely because of the pro-Nazi and pro-fascist sentiments of pivotal elements of the American power establishment. The fruits of that particular sowing and are now being harvested, and we're going to spend a number of hours taking a look at an examination of German national security policy, the perpetuation of the old in the supposedly new Bundeswehr. We're going to take a look at a frightening degree of political continuity between the Third Reich and the, quote, new, unquote, Germany. In order to do that, we're going to be reading at great length from a very important new pamphlet slash book. It's a short book or a long pamphlet, depending on how one wants to view it. It is entitled Reunited Germany, The New Danger. This is put out by the British Searchlight magazine and is available from them. And in turn, this draws heavily on German anti-fascist sources. Indeed, this particular pamphlet was published in association with Antifa Infoblatt, Infoblatt. That is, of course, a German anti-fascist information service. The address, etc., for the Searchlight magazine from which one can get this is as follows.
To subscribe to the Searchlight, a British anti-fascist publication, write to Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, or phone 011-4471-284-4040. Or fax 011-4471-284-4410. That's the Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B, New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR. Phone 011-4471-284-4040. Or fax at 011-4471-284-4410.
That the address for the Searchlight magazine from which one can obtain Reunited Germany, The New Danger. I'm going to begin this examination of the Reunited Germany by reading some segments of the foreword and also the introduction by German author Michael Schmidt. Michael Schmidt, the author of the book The New Reich, Violent Extremism in Unified Germany and Beyond, Pantheon 93, a book we have examined at length on this program and will examine in the future. Michael Schmidt, also the producer of a prize-winning documentary called The Truth Shall Make You Free, about his experiences infiltrating the Nazi underground in Germany. By way of effecting a transition to this discussion, I'm going to read some segments of the foreword and also the introduction. A segment from the foreword reads as follows. It is almost a matter of bad taste to talk about the German government and nationalism all in the same breath. Facts, however, are stubborn things. They can be rather unpleasant, too. And the fact is that to ensure the fulfillment of German unity as part of their political program, Chancellor Kohl's Christian Democratic Union, or CDU, and their allies in the Bavarian Christian Social Union, or CSU, drove the process of reunification forward with the whip, and for some, the carrot, of nationalism. The new great power Germany, which begins, even if cautiously, once more to militarize its politics, is not what most people wished for from reunification. They did not think it was part of the package. And few would have thought that the question of how to relate to this would-be superpower would now be exercising the minds of politicians of other countries. The nationalism unleashed during that indecently short period between November 9, 1989, when the Berlin Wall opened, and October 3, 1990, when Germany was reunited, cannot be put back into the bottle like a genie. It has become the leitmotif of German foreign policy. It determines community relations inside Germany where, thanks to talk by CDU and CSU politicians about, quote, foreign infiltration, unquote, foreigners are made to feel exactly what they are, foreigners. It provokes ugly anti-Semitic attitudes that are not confined to street corner shaven head louts, but which reach as far as Helmut Kohl's own advisors. Each day we see more and more of the real consequences of all the talk about, quote, German identity, unquote, German sovereignty, unquote, German destiny, unquote, and German nationhood, unquote, in the 11 months leading up to reunification when Bild, read by 17 million people a day, often carried its headlines in the German national colors of black, red, and gold. It is Daniel Cohn-Bendit, the now green and former, quote, red, unquote, hero of the 1968 student revolution in Paris, who today waves these other colors and demands that the German Air Force bomb Belgrade. So who needs Bild? The ambitions, quote, unquote, of the government haven't yet got round to include bombing anyone. Germany wants a seat in the UN Security Council. Its generals want to build an army of intervention. Its political leaders want to decide on the future of other members of the European Union, and when anybody objects, well, there is always the Bundesbank on hand to dish out a currency devaluation or two to keep the objectors in line. The situation is, another unpalatable fact, slipping out of control. The mess surrounding the policies of the United Nations, NATO, and the European Union in former Yugoslavia testifies to the inability of supranational institutions to contain nationalism. To a great extent, these last two institutions were established precisely to restrict German ambitions. When these same institutions lose all authority and prove useless, what then? National interests can only predominate and must clash at first politically and later, such is the way of the world, with arms. The whole tragedy of Bosnia indicates that. And when German ambition, built up on the foundations of what German nationalists, even the respectable ones who hold high office, see as, quote, German interests, unquote, is put back on the national agenda, things start getting dangerous. And turning now to part of Michael Schmidt's introduction. Since 1989, nationalism in Germany has grown at a terrifying pace, and has been accompanied by a high level of political violence from the extreme right not seen since the days of the Weimar Republic when Hitler's fascists sought to terrorize all opposition. This violence, which has resulted in more than 80 fascist killings since 1990 and more than 23,000 right-wing extremist crimes investigated by the German police in 1993 alone, is the product of the rise of nationalism in a country that has signally failed to come to terms with its recent history and which continues to have judicial and law enforcement systems that are, quote, blind in the right eye, unquote. Since reunification, Germany has been the recipient of numerous protests and complaints about racism, anti-Semitism, fascism, and state-inspired nationalist activities from, among others, the U.S. State Department, the Russian Foreign Ministry, the Polish Foreign Ministry, the Danish, Czech, Nigerian, Portuguese, and Israeli governments, the United Nations Refugee Organization, UNHCR, the World Jewish Congress, the European Jewish Congress, Amnesty International, and the U.S. Human Rights Organization, Helsinki Watch. All have demanded an end to the racist and anti-Semitic violence of the German extreme right, and many have put the responsibility for the lawless activities of Germany's 65,000-plus organized right-wing extremists squarely on the shoulders of the German government itself, either for its pitiful inaction in the face of this criminality or, in some cases, actually accusing the government of complicity. Inside Germany, there exists a very broad consensus of concerned human rights organizations, anti-fascist organizations, some intellectuals, leaders of some opposition political parties, leaders of minority religious and ethnic communities, anti-militarist and trade union groups, which takes the matter further. For this broad consensus, the issue of terror and violence, of burning refugee centers, vandalized former Nazi concentration camps, and desecrated Jewish property is summed up in a single German phrase. Die Brandstifter sitzen in Bonn. Translated into English, this phrase loses something but is nonetheless accurate. Quote, the arsonists are sitting in Bonn, a reference to the German government of Chancellor Helmut Kohl. The world-famous German novelist Günter Grass hit the nail on the head in 1993 when he declared, quote, the most dangerous thing is that we have skinheads in government. They are nicely dressed with beautiful hair. They speak well, but they think in the same way as the young kids who shave their heads and carry swastikas and demonstrate. They encourage these ideas and these brutal actions, unquote. What might reasonably be termed the resistance, few use the term opposition anymore in Germany, shares the views of Grass and those who identify the German government and state as central to the problem of nationalism and its evil manifestations. More and more, they see that in reality, Two separate nationalist projects exist in Germany, the Nazi project and that of the mainstream conservative right, embodied in the ruling Christian Democratic Union and its even more right-wing counterpart, the Christian Social Union in Bavaria. Sometimes these projects converge, sometimes they diverge, but almost continuously they run parallel. As we'll see as we get on into this series, frequently those two are part of the same process and are really two different manifestations of the same thing. Continuing. For the conservative nationalists, who are not fascists and Nazis, despite their lust to make Germany a world power again, the fascists even represent a measure of competition and at least a political threat. Hence, the bans on some Nazi groups, as explained in the section of this pamphlet on, quote, internal security, unquote. This conservative nationalism, which harks right back to the national right parties, the Deutsche Nationale Volkspartei and the Deutsche Volkspartei, the people who handed over power to Hitler in 1933 in the Weimar Republic, has escaped serious attention, as have the activities of the new militarists. This pamphlet, which does not and could not pretend to be comprehensive, scrutinizes some of the aspects of the new-old nationalism and of the militarism which was never rooted out but lay comparatively dormant for 45 years, only to be re-energized by the takeover of East Germany and the reunification that consummated it. We do not doubt that this Searchlight Special Edition will attract critics, not least from those unfamiliar with the developments in Germany. Many of the facts presented here will shock, but almost without exception, facts cited are taken from the liberal and conservative German press and from parliamentary documents, which, far from being state secrets, are publicly available. It is one of the peculiar contradictions of the current situation in Germany that so much information on these developments is to hand, or at hand. Not everything is concealed, and in part we publish this pamphlet because of the relative failure of the international press to report accurately on the situation in Germany. There have, of course, been honorable exceptions, not least the excellent reporting of the Daily Telegraph's Robin Gedeye, G-E-D-Y-E, and the work of American journalists Karen Breslau and Mark Fisher. But generally, coverage has been superficial and, in some cases, so false as to amount almost to disinformation. Searchlight is very proud that its team has been able to report since even before the Berlin Wall opened the revival of nationalism in Germany with formidable accuracy and depth. Even some of our erstwhile critics have had to accept that our analysis has stood up to the test of real developments. We shall also probably be accused of being, quote, anti-German, unquote, but our friends in Germany, and they are many, will testify readily to the great solidarity and material and political assistance provided by Searchlight. Among German anti-fascists, such criticism will find scant sympathy. Our objective is not to fan the flames of anti-German prejudice, but to warn of the character of revived German nationalism which twice in this century, through its unbridled ambition, has plunged the world into war. Above all, we want our readers to see, well in advance, that once more a war danger begins to haunt the situation in Europe and to help develop an awareness of that danger. A Germany that begins to view its army as an instrument of foreign policy, that can organize a torchlight parade reminiscent of the Nazis by the Bundeswehr in front of the Brandenburg Gate to celebrate the departure of U.S., British, and French troops, has by no means exhausted its possibilities. Events are now taking place in the heart of Europe which a mere 5 years ago would have been regarded as unimaginable at best and as sheer fantasy at worst. Nobody can forecast the course of developments in the next 5 years or the next decade. However, in the light of the changed situation and the dangerous trends illustrated in this pamphlet, there are, alas, few grounds for optimism. Our hope is to warn so that people can make reasoned judgments for themselves, debate the issues, and organize action to ensure early international opposition to German nationalism and militarism, and to encourage all those brave people who resist these frightening tendencies in Germany. Nobody can say they were not warned. Indeed. We're going to begin the first examination of the actual text itself of this particular pamphlet, that is to say the hard informational segment, by examining the first major element that is discussed in this particular pamphlet by Searchlight, and that is the Bundeswehr, the German army. As we shall see as we get into this series, the German army is a very appropriate place to begin because, as is the case with so many other institutions in what used to be West Germany, now the unified Germany, there was not a clear break with the past, as we have been told. I've dealt with the failure of denazification and also the Cold War public relations attempt to portray Germany as having been effectively denazified. This was deemed necessary during the Cold War to contrast West Germany with the Stalinist dictatorship in the East. Alas, that break with the past was never really effected in Germany and the army. The Bundeswehr is no exception. The first segment of the Searchlight's Reunited Germany, the New Danger, is entitled A Democratic Army? Question mark. Of course, that is the portrayal of the, quote, new, unquote, German army, is that it is democratic. Skipping down, of the 217 generals of the Bundeswehr listed in 1976, only three had not begun their military careers under Hitler. This connection to Hitler's Third Reich alone rules out a clear break with the traditional German military ethic. By the way, I dealt with the failure of denazification in the German military in not only Radio Free America, well, actually in Radio Free America program number 37, the October 4th, 1992 installment of same. Skipping down and continuing with the Searchlight article, actually Reunited Germany, the New Danger, the Searchlight pamphlet. Clear evidence of this process, and now this, by the way, is the process referred to here, is the attempt by the Bundeswehr to stress the degree of continuity between the German military of the past, including and especially the German military under Adolf Hitler, including the Waffen-SS and its HIAG organization. That is the process alluded to here, the process of stressing continuity between the old and the new within the German military, the Bundeswehr in particular. Clear evidence of this process is to be found in the context between various units of the Bundeswehr and the former Bundesverband der Soldaten der ehemaligen Waffen-SS, EV, Hilfsgemeinschaft auf Gesenseitigkeit, HIAG, a veterans organization of the Waffen-SS, and between the Bundeswehr and the ODR, to which a large number of former members of the SS, including alleged war criminals, belong, and to which the Bundeswehr has had a, quote, comradely attachment, unquote, for over 39 years. By the way, forgive what was probably certain mispronunciations. I don't speak German, and this is a long title. Again, talking about continuity between not only German military organizations of the Hitler period, but specifically the HIAG, Waffen-SS, post-World War II support and fraternal organization, and also the ODR, that given to the holders of the Knight's Cross. That was Hitler's personal or a military decoration personally established by Adolf Hitler. Continuing with the Searchlight's Reunited Germany, the New Danger. In connection with the ex-SS-HIAG and the ODR, it is appropriate to mention the judgment of the Nuremberg Military Tribunal on the SS. Quote, "It is impossible to accept a single part of the SS in these criminal activities. The Allgemeine SS, or General SS, took an active part in the persecution of the Jews and was the source of recruitment of concentration camp guards. Units of the Waffen-SS took a direct part in the murder of prisoners of war and acts of terror in the occupied territories. It provided the personnel of the Einsatzgruppen, the SS units which went into newly Nazi-occupied areas, and rounded up and executed all elements regarded as subhuman or dangerous to Nazi interests, and had authority over the guard units of concentration camps after the SS Totenkopfverbande or SS Deathhead units were relieved of their original responsibility. The SS was used for purposes which were criminal under the law," unquote. This judgment is not unknown to the Bundeswehr authorities and should therefore have had some impact on their conduct. Does it therefore mean anything at all to the Bundeswehr that the rally with the ODR in Celle in October of 1993 took place on the anniversary of the execution of the death sentence passed on Nazi military chiefs Jodl and Keitel by the same International Military Tribunal in Nuremberg? Since 1979, HIAG has been listed in the annual report of the Federal German Internal Security Service among, quote, other extreme right-wing associations, unquote. However, for example, in the Security Service report for 1982, there was nothing of particular note concerning HIAG. The report merely indicated that the HIAG journal, Der Freiwillige, published, quote, laudatory articles about the conduct of war and life at the front without any preamble distancing itself from those politicians who were responsible for the war. This distancing is also apparently absent on the part of the Bundeswehr because of its own close association with organizations like HIAG. By the way, the ODR celebration or ceremony in Celle, C-E-L-L-E, was to honor recipients of the Knight's Cross, again a decoration personally established by Adolf Hitler. Many of its recipients were members of the SS, and the British Army sent a contingent to this particular ceremony, including General Andrew Ridgway, later sent to command British forces in the former Yugoslavia. We will, in our next segment, examine other examples of the institutional continuity between the past, the quote old unquote German army and German military, and the quote new unquote German military. Again, this is particularly relevant at the end of June of 1995. The German military embarked on its first combat mission outside of Germany since World War II, an air cover mission in the former Bosnia, specifically using Tornado jets to guard against missile attacks of the type that downed an American F-16. The references to archive shows refer to archive shows available from a tape duplication service called Archives on Audio. More information about that right now.
Tape cassettes of Dave Emery's archive documentaries and weekly One Step Beyond programs are available from a tape duplication service. The service is Archives on Audio, and you can contact them at Post Office Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840. Once again, that's P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number and area code are 415-346-1840. A 12-page catalog listing and describing each archive show is available.
And again, neither myself nor the station makes money out of this arrangement. This concludes this particular segment of One Step Beyond. We will continue with our analysis of the degree of continuity between the old and the new German military, and indeed between the old and the new Germany, in our next segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.